So here we are, week two of our teaching on giving. If you were here last week, you'd have heard Steve do part one. If you weren't, I wholeheartedly recommend going online and having a listen to it. It'll help put some of what I'm going to say in context. But very briefly, if you weren't here, Steve gave us a kind of really helpful theology of giving, if you like, last week. We were reminded that primarily our giving is part of our response to God's grace, that God has first been gracious to us, and the way we give is just part of how we respond to him. And we were also reminded that our giving is part of our worship of God, that we're called to give from what we have and not what we have left. Well, this week I want to kind of build on that and kind of dig a bit further into our relationship with money, to try and have a look at what Jesus has to say about it, which I think sheds light on often why we feel uncomfortable about money or uncomfortable talking about money. So verse 24 of our reading, Jesus says this: "No one can serve two masters." Just can't do it, folks. "Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Say two masters, Jesus says. They're God and they are money. And there's only room for one of them at the top of our agenda. There's only room for serving one master. And if we get that wrong, if we choose the wrong one, that has consequences for us. Now, I'm sure we'd all pretty much like to sit here this morning and think to ourselves, well, this probably doesn't apply to me very much this morning, because clearly I get all of my security, all of my identity from my relationship with God, right? Maybe one or two of you, perhaps. But the reality is, for most of us, and I certainly include myself in this, that I think that's simply not true. I think if you look at the way any of us lives our lives, it tells a slightly different story. Now, we're not alone in this. I don't want you to beat yourself up over it. It's not kind of just a case of individual failing. It's much bigger than that. Because if you were to look at one of the dominant narratives in the last 60 years of our society, it would go something like this. It would be the story that tells us that money equates to happiness and well-being. Money can solve your problems. And essentially, the more you have of it, the more of your problems can be solved, and the more secure you feel. Now, interestingly, it's a narrative that is starting to be challenged a bit in this age of austerity. But we have still all bought into that narrative on some level. You know, for example, we know that money doesn't buy us happiness, right? But money buys us a big TV. Money buys us exotic holidays. Money gives us the chance to go away lots of times in the year. If money doesn't make us feel secure, then why do we feel worried when we think there might not be enough of it? See, Jesus tells us that money can be a master, that we can end up serving money, serving our accumulation of wealth, ahead of serving God. Now, lots of you will know this word, but the word that Jesus uses that's translated in the NIV as money is the word mammon. Now, that word isn't a kind of a neutral word. It kind of has a spiritual dimension to it. It's a loaded term. There are other words Jesus could have used, but that's the one he chose to use, mammon. And what he's saying in there, I think by using that word, is he is acknowledging that there is a power that comes along with wealth. A power that, if we're not careful, can convince us that money is all important. He says you can't serve both. God needs to be number one. Because if we allow money to be up there, to kind of sneak into that top spot on our leaderboard, it will drive us away from God. It's very stark, isn't it? He says, look, you will love one and you will end up hating the other. Now, I know when I've and other people have spoken on giving and on money, one of the things that I'm quick to remind us of is there's nothing inherently wrong with having money or wealth. But what we need is a right relationship with it, so that it can't have that opportunity for the power that comes with it to kind of stick it in there at head of God in our lives. And Jesus gives really stark warning of the consequences of what happens when money occupies that number one spot, when our relationship with it is out of kilter, when we get it wrong. So in verse 19, he says this. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." What does that all mean? Well, perhaps it's helpful to look at what it doesn't mean. So what Jesus is not saying is, just don't worry about this life, about having money and things like that now. It's all about the future. Don't worry about today. It's all about when you get to heaven. That's when you'll get all the good bits. That's not what he's saying. Because when he refers to heaven, the language he is using is in the present tense. So he's referencing it in terms of both the future, but also where God is in the here and now, where God's kingdom, we might want to think about it like that, is at work. So what Jesus says is, he says, look, don't get distracted and put all your trust now, today, in all these earthly treasures. Don't get caught up in acquiring loads of money and loads of wealth, because all of them are temporary. They can all be taken away in a heartbeat. The moths and the vermin can get in there. The thieves can break in and steal. I don't know if anyone here has ever been made redundant suddenly. You will know all of a sudden how your income and some of your identity and security is taken away like that. I've seen it happen to friends. And I've seen the effect that having all our earthly treasures taken from us can have if that's where we're staking some of our identity. It can be devastating. So Jesus says, that's not the place to put your trust. He says, put your trust in your relationship with God where he is right now. Learn to love and serve God, and you end up with treasure that no one can take from you, both now in your life today and in the future. Because that treasure you get from knowing God and trusting God, no vermin can get at that. No moths can eat at it. No one can steal it from you. And he goes on, he says, what you trust is an indication of what you love. And that challenge as we read this passage for us is to think, is the thing we trust most our wealth, our income, or our relationship with God? We might sit here this morning and quite rightly go, well, that's not me. That's not me. I don't do that. I don't put my trust in money to fix things for me. I just trust in God. But then how about this? Show of hands. How many of us have bought stuff to cheer ourselves up? I have. There is a pile of unread books in my house. Things that I've just said to myself, oh, I really need that in order to feel happy. When I have whatever it is, I'll feel great. I'm feeling a bit rubbish. I'm a bit busy. I'm going to buy something and it'll make me feel good. And I think what we're really doing on a low level is each time we do that, what we are saying and proclaiming to the rest of the world is this. We're saying, money buys me happiness. It's a little indicator for us of where we put our trust with that situation. Jesus goes on to say, he doesn't let up. He says, the eye is the lamp of the body. He said, if your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? What he's saying is, what you put as your number one priority will then have a trickle-down effect into everything else in your life. What you look at with your eyes, what you prioritize, affects your whole body. A simple example of this for us would be if all we ate were unhealthy, really fatty foods, we know that there's a knock-on for our bodies for that. Yes? Yeah? Pretty simple. And what Jesus is saying, he said, this is like the same, but on a spiritual level. He's saying if what we have in our hearts and what we fix our eyes on is unhealthy, then that's going to affect the whole of the rest of us. So he says, if your eyes are healthy, if your eyes are fixed on God, then your whole body, it's like it's full of light. He says, your life is going to be full of the great things that a relationship with God brings you. But if your eyes are unhealthy, if you're fixed on money up there instead of God, then that is what's going to fill and influence your whole life. And we'll all have experienced that, I would imagine, to some extent. Many of us will have known worry and anxiety that money can bring us. Ironically, even when we've got plenty of it. So let's think practically, perhaps, for a few moments. What can we do to keep money from getting in the way of God as our top priority? Well, I've got three very simple ideas for you to have a go at this morning. And the first one is just going to build, I think, hope on what Steve said last week, because he said it too. The first one is to talk about it. We need to be open about talking about money in church. We need to be open in talking about our money and our finances with our other half, or with a trusted friend or somebody like that. We need to be open about talking about money and our giving. And you know what? When we do that, we diffuse a great deal of the power and worry that money can have for us. Yeah, Steve said it last week. I recommend it too. Every year, Susie and I make a time to sit down and review our giving and our kind of finances in general. This year, we've had quite a big change in our lives as Susie's gone back to college and started a new job, as Elizabeth has gone into childcare, and we've had to sit down and work out our finances almost from kind of step one all over again, it feels like. And what we find is that talking about it and having a proper grown-up conversation stops it from becoming some massive worry. It stops some of that power that comes with money getting in the way. Because once we've talked about it, we know where we stand. And there's a peace that comes from that. And actually, even if you've got a lot of worries and maybe money problems, talking about it is still the first thing you need to do. Because getting it out in the open is the first step towards being able to fix it. That's the first thing if you were to talk to someone from Christians Against Poverty, that's the first thing they need to do, is to talk about it. Because it diffuses the power and you can get on with dealing with it. So once you've talked about it, my next bit of recommendation, next practical thing, is to pray about it. Work out what you think you want to give, and then offer it to God in prayer, and see what God has to say on the matter. I came across this lovely quote from C.S. Lewis, writing about Christian giving, said this. He said, "Our temptation is to look eagerly for the minimum that will be accepted. We are, in fact, like very honest but reluctant taxpayers." And often our prayers around giving, certainly my prayers in the past, have been a little bit like this. "Lord, I can afford to give you £60 a month, but I'd really like to give you 50. What should I do, Lord?" Sounds trivial, but I've prayed sort of similar things to that when I've been thinking about my giving. And we need to offer these things up to God, because he will help us to deal sometimes with that kind of clinging tendency we might have to that last £10. But when we pray to it, we want to seek God's voice. We want to hear what God has to say. And you'll know when God has spoken and you're in step with him, because hopefully you'll feel a sense of peace about it. You'll kind of feel sort of right internally. And that brings me to my third and final idea. So talk about it. Pray about it. And then the last thing to do, and I think this is the best way, if you want to fix a relationship with money, is to give generously. You see, generosity has a funny sort of way of keeping money and our worries about it in their proper place. Richard Foster wrote this on it. He said, "Giving has a way of rooting out the tough old miser within us. Just the very act of letting go of money or some other treasure does something within us. It destroys the demon greed." It destroys the demon. That's the power of generosity in our lives. It completely shatters some of that negative power associated with money. And I know this is a challenge. It's a challenge for me. Because if you've been like me, I've spent most of my adult life living in a place of relative financial comfort. For my whole adult life, I've been able to pay my bills, and I've had enough money to do some of the things that I like to do after I've paid for stuff. And I actually find that being in that position of comfort is often one of the hardest places to be generous from. Because we get very comfortable with our comfort. We get kind of really stuck in that, and we think, oh, I'm not sure I want to let go of all of these comforting things, of the comfort I take from knowing I can do all the things I want to do. I used to worry a lot. I used to, sit in church, I'd hear sermons like this where I was encouraged to tithe, where I was encouraged to be generous, and I would sit there thinking, oh, Lord, I'm not sure I want to have to let go of all of those things that make me happy. If I tithed my income, I'm not sure I could still do all that I would like to do. I'm not sure I'd be comfortable, Lord. I didn't trust that I would have enough. Which is crazy when you think about it, because the God we see in Scripture is the God of abundance and generosity and provision. The God who always looks out for his people. He might not always give you what you want, but he will always give you what you need, each and every single time. When I look back over the last 7 or 8 years, from stepping away from full-time employment to going back to being a student to coming to this sort of post, which comes with a lot less money than secular employment, and the number of times I had worried that there wouldn't be enough, and yet every single time God said to me, just trust me, Andrew, and there will be enough. You will have enough to do all the things you need to do. It was a challenge for me to get to that point of tithing. In fact, it took me 6 years to get to that point. And I did it by applying the practical advice that I'll share with you now that Steve shared last week. That I just simply looked, and I looked at what percentage my income was that I was giving, and what 10% would look like, and I worked out how could I raise that by a few percent each year until I got there. It took me 6 years to overcome the worry of not having enough, to overcome not trusting God on that matter. And you know what? When you get to that place, it is liberating. I would say I've experienced some of what Richard Foster talks about in destroying the demon of greed, disarming the power of money. Because when I got to that place, I tasted some of that victory. And the weirdest bit is I look back at it and went, why did I worry so much about this? I've got absolutely everything I need, to live the sort of life I want to live. Everything I need. And I suppose the challenge for me is to continue, not to stop because I've got there, but to continue to be challenged to give generously so that that sort of power of greed can have very little hold in my life. And for some of us, we kind of give 10% as a benchmark because that's what we see in the Bible. Now, there'll be some of us whose circumstances just make that impossible. But there'll also be some of us who actually 10% is kind of like a drop in the ocean of our income. And God will challenge us to be more generous than that. It's a tough challenge for sure, but God will call us to that perhaps. The best way to try and deal with this stuff is to have a go, to really step up and step out. And it doesn't matter if you don't get it right all the time. I don't. I really don't. When I looked at the cost of 4 days a week of childcare, you can imagine exactly where my position of trust, where the gut reaction was to go with it. To go, oh my goodness, how on earth can we make the sums work? Now, thankfully, I didn't stay in that place because I remembered that over the last little couple of years, I've seen God really turn up and do his thing for me. But I'm still working on it. And I'm sure we are all still working on it. And I want to encourage you that we need to just keep trying and keep trusting. And it'll help us get that healthy relationship with money. Because Jesus is unequivocal. He says there's no room, folks, for two masters in our lives. It's God. It's got to be God as number one. Not our wealth. It's the key to your health. It's the key to your well-being. So that's my encouragement this year, I suppose, is to say, I want you to take a step of faith in your relationship with God, about your relationship in money. to talk about it, to pray about it, to be generous with it, but most of all, to trust God about it. Amen.